And here we go. Welcome back to Mostly Hairless Apes. It's season five. It's got to be a new season. I did season four leading up to the election. Tried to work out my artificial selection model. I think I have a really good one. I'm getting close to publishing the Biobel. The Biobel hopefully will give us something to work with. It's a bit, the math is working out. And now we're into this new reign of Donald the First is coming. Who knows what things will happen over the next 4 years. As the Orange Parasite has won the election again. He convinced the electorate of America, enough people who were voting, that making decisions similar to him is a good idea. And how does he make decisions? As far as I can tell, he primarily bases decisions on economic decisions and primarily based on what's good for him, as far as I can tell, because the economy's been good to him. I've been working on this model now for several years, and I think I've told you about this, is that the model breaks civilization down into three main components. Four, if you can include biology. I mean, obviously, there's natural selection. That's one of the beautiful things that biology as a science has figured out. We have natural selection. We're mostly hairless apes. But we evolved consciousness. And that's what allows us to do artificial selection. Somewhere, it could be a magic spirit from deities that we can't identify. Or it just could be a neural circuit that somehow creates an avatar in our brain that allows us to pose the question, what if I did this versus that? Maybe it's related to bilateral symmetry and having a right and left side. Maybe if we were radially symmetrical organisms like sea anemones or sea stars, we'd have a different mental processing if they evolved brains. But having a light right and left hemisphere and commissural fibers that connect them, perhaps we have a neural circuit that says, hey, what if I could do this versus that? And I could make a binary choice at a fundamental level. If that's what consciousness is, if that's what free will is, at the very least, it can be explained biologically then at some level. And so when we're doing that and we make decisions, how do we make decisions? Well, we make it between knowledge and belief. We make it between what's going on inside of our head and the evidence we see around us. And what evidence do we see around us? Well, originally it was just the natural world. Whenever consciousness awoke, I'm going to watch using woke nowadays, I bet. That's not going to be a fun term. But whenever consciousness arose from an evolutionary birth back in prehistory in the dawn of humanity, when we shifted from merely Homo sapiens to or whatever came before into thinking humans, wise humans, however you want to translate Homo sapiens. And we came up with this idea that we can think, we can solve problems, we can make selections, we can keep those wolf puppies, and we can make labradoodles 20,000 years later. We've evolved this thing we call civilization. And what have we created? We've created marvelous adaptations. And one of them is the economy. The economy is our artificial mechanism to deal with the natural world. It's the interface between the natural world and human society. And we decide how we're going to distribute things. Do I own this? Do we own this? Do you own that? Can I take that from you? But then the rules become, so the economy says, how do we distribute resources? But the government becomes the social rules between humans then. Because we can all interact with the environment, but then we have to interact with each other. And when we interact with each other, we have governments, we have rules for society. And those rules determine how we're supposed to behave to each other. And you know what? There's infinite civilizations, as far as I can tell. If not infinite, at least as many population factorial products are produced. Because my wife and I have our own little micro-civilization. And then I live in my household with other family members. We have our own civilization. I have extended family in the local community. I have more extended family in other locations. I have friends and colleagues. And I have all these people who I can work with. And all of those are just my civilizations. And you've got your own, too, out there. In whatever part. And you take that up to 8 billion people on the planet. That's a lot of civilizations. But we each have our own way to distribute resources, and we each have our own rules of interaction. But it all boils down to belief systems, too, because at some level we run into questions. What we realize about knowledge, when we are thinking humans, we realize there are limits. If you're a mature human, you realize there are limits. And that's where you make the big decision about belief. Beliefs define our ethics. Our ethics become the standards that I can hold in my hip pocket and I can pull out and I can reference them and say, hey, what are the rules in this situation? I don't know what the rules are. Here's what my rules have been in other civilizations. These are the rules I've decided are good. These are the rules that have helped me decide what's bad. And I'm going to extend those into a new civilization when I meet a new person. Or deal with a new situation, or deal with new resources. And that's how we go through life. We form a moral compass, we build a moral compass, and that's when you become an adult, when you actually can make responsible decisions, because you have a personal moral code, and then you interact with other people, and they decide whether you're acceptable or not. And we all build our civilizations. We distribute our resources. We interact with each other. And it's all based on what we think, what we believe to be good or bad. And that's the essence of civilization. And now, what do we have coming up? Coming up on the horizon is at least 4 years of an administration directed by an individual who, as far as I can tell, is primarily concerned with making choices that benefit him. And I guess that's my main problem with the orange parasite and why I call him an orange parasite. Because he's an individual whose ethical code, based on all the evidence that I've been able to gather, just reading and watching, I've never met the man, but he seems to be more concerned with himself than anybody else. And he deals with other people in a transactional sort of way, if you want to go down that psych road. But he's all worried about what can you do for me, and what can I do for you, and how can I get more for me out of the process? Ah, the art of the deal. That's the deal. That's what it's all about. We are all meant doing things. And as long as I can increase my resources and have more fun, do what I enjoy, I win. That's pursuit of happiness. That's the American way. But here's what I think, though. Here's what my moral compass tells me. My moral compass says, I don't know what, you're going to die. We're all going to die. To me, what's a more ethical choice is how do we preserve the species? How do we maintain humanity into the future? Well, we have to consider who we are. We're an evolving species that might survive or might go extinct based on a variety of forces, including natural selection, as well as artificial selection, what we do with our mental decisions, how we interact with our beliefs and our governments and our economies. And we roll that into a ball and try to live every day. And so what's going to happen when we've elevated one level? Because what's going to happen over the next 4 years in America, I think, and here's my testable hypothesis. I'll put it on the record on December 5th, 2024. About 6 weeks till the election of the formal inauguration of our 47th president here in the United States. Although I do think, just to fuck with the numbers, I think the current president ought to resign and make his vice president number 47, just to fuck with the Orange Parasite's marketing. to make her number 47, then he'd have to be number 48. But he'd probably figure out a good way to spin that anyway. But what's going to happen when we elevate? Because now here's the ideal. Because this is why I voted blue. And a lot of people I know voted blue. And other people I know voted red. But I think voting blue was the choice to say, this democracy idea, this idea that we all get to decide, is a really good idea. It's a better way to run society, as opposed to having people who have a lot of money make the decisions. And that's where we are now. That's what won. That's what people voted for, apparently. You know, we could get into the, we're not going to go down the conspiracy tin hat, aluminum foil conspiracy rabbit hole. That, you know, I don't know how that's working. That's, I don't know. That's for another podcast. But for this podcast, we're going to assume the election was straight and that the majority of Americans who bothered to vote picked the orange parasite. And said, and why did they do that? Because they said, he knows how to make money. I mean, there was the weird group of religious conservatives who got played, in my opinion. They got played beautifully. They don't care. They were throwing a bone of abortion and anti-gay rights and all of that stuff, which unfortunately the people who were pro-democracy got confused by, got bogged down by. And that's the fundamental problem right there with our choices of government right now. Whatever you believe, you have to have some form of government and some form of economy to have a civilization. And that's those are the components that are in my hypothesis. And so how do you build those? And what would they compose, what would they consist of if we kept going, if we'd maintained another blue administration versus a red administration? Now, the blue administration dove deep into democracy. And it got bogged down in the horribly minuscule details of how do you value each and every person, be they a he, she, or they. And because they spend time trying to reconcile every individual difference and give a forum to everyone, it becomes horribly inefficient and unmanageable. That's the problem with democracy, is it only works in small groups. It only works well in small groups. As you get larger and larger groups, and you get more and more diverse populations, because that's what biology selects for. Biology selects for diversity. Genetic fidelity only goes so far. There is a consistent mutation rate for every species. That's what natural selection teaches us, is that biological species evolve because they mutate. They mutate and they produce different combinations. They do sexual recombinations. As a sexually reproducing species, you get new genetic combinations every generation. So diversity, and a diversity allows you options. That's the beautiful thing about evolution. It says, we don't know how we're going to beat entropy. We don't know how we're going to keep our act together in the face of a changing ecosystem and different threats of pathogens and predators that might evolve, but we're going to keep generating genetic diversity. And there's a stability in terms of how much do I keep stable, how much do I change? And that's one of the things that drives evolution. Where's the best balance? Trying to find that right mix of progressive and conservative changes. What's worth keeping? What do we need to throw out? What do we need to change? And that's, it goes along genetically by generations. That's why natural selection's really slow. And that's why artificial selection changes things faster. Because artificial selection literally operates at the speed of thought. How fast can I make a decision and act on it to change the environment around me is how artificial selection drives evolutionary change. Natural selection depends on genetic changes across generations. So bacteria, which have generations every hour, can evolve a lot faster than humans, which at best have to wait until puberty to be reproductively competent. And once you're reproductively competent, though, you can produce babies, and you could go down the natural selection path. But we have artificial selection. And we change our governments and our economies and our belief systems all the time. And we look for stable ones. And we had one in America for a while. But the problem is, it grew out of colonialism. It grew out of the colonial era, which has been the human civilization dominant mode for the last 500 years. In European cultures, along with others, there's been colonies and slaves and empires for thousands of years. But the current Western domination was driven by the colonial powers. And it involved certain components, and it linked. Because this is when a civilization becomes stable. When you take those three variables and you synergize them, you link them together into a functional whole. Because if they're disagreeing or if one's excessive, the civilization will be unstable. Because people have to believe in something, because we all have ignorance. Ultimately, we all look for answers. That's curiosity. That's an innate human species. If we ever lose that, we'll go extinct. Because that's the only reason to have brains, is to figure stuff out. Why should we waste 20% of our metabolic energy running brains when we could just be stimulus response organisms and kill other things and eat them? Because if we can use our brains, we can come up with artificial solutions to problems. And that lets us do different things. Let us conquer the planet and expand from a fewer than a billion humans to over 8 billion at the current count. Because we're successful. We've manipulated the environment. We've domesticated dozens of species. We've built dams and bridges and linked geography and altered flows of matter and energy. We've gotten off the planet, or at least a few of us have. And we're expanding as a species. That's what we're doing. But what's the best way to do it? Well, over the last century, we threw out all the monarchs. Because what colonialism was dependent on was all of the monarchs owning most of the territory and the land and sending down decrees and saying, hey, people can do this or people can do that. But a few hundred years ago, we recaptured the idea of democracy. And we said, you know what? Maybe kings aren't all that great. And maybe gods aren't all that great. That was the big challenge of Darwin. Darwin said, hey, you know what? Maybe there is no God in the process. That's why Darwin sat on his book for 30 years. It took him decades to figure it out and have the gumption to step out and say, you know what? Maybe this is all just a natural process. Maybe it just happens. And there isn't any personal deity out there to protect us. And that's been fought against by the long-term religions because there's huge power invested in that. And the monarchs are invested in that because that's why we had the divine right of kings. The divine right of kings says God and government are the same. And that makes a lot of sense when you're trying to justify why you should have certain rules. That's why we need belief systems. At its core, we have to have an ethical code. That's what the commandments were in Christianity. That's what the pillars of Islam are. And I'm sure there are comparable ones in other theistic belief systems. But science has its own commandments, which I did on the last episode. And if we had a certain set of rules, and that we can move forward with those, maybe that'll happen someday. But for right now, we're in a state of civilization in America where we've said, you know, belief is its own thing. You can believe in this very conservative Christian deity with these ancient principles that say, man on top, get it over with quick. The man can own woman. The man should be in charge. And we'll explore the biological implications of all of the rules about sexual relations in the next podcast. I think we'll do sex for a hypothesis. And we'll talk about that. But for right now, the idea that ownership and capitalism should be the primary thing is the simplest form to run the environment, to run the government. Because what it says is whoever's making money should make the decisions because you're the cleverest person. You're the smartest person in manipulating resources. And you've been able to manipulate resources to the point where you can capture so many of them that you don't have to worry about any rules. You could do whatever the hell you want because you're filthy rich. That's the problem with democracy. Because democracy says everybody's going to share. Ultimately, democracy leads to some form of socialism or communism because it says, oh, wait a minute, if we're all equal, if all my vote is equal to your vote, then eventually we're going to bog down into inefficiencies because we're going to start arguing about things based on the vote. And that's why what the Republicans did a few years ago was brilliant. Karl Rove, dubbed Turd Blossom by the second President Bush, W, was pushed an agenda along with other evil masterminds of the red, right, conservative parties. Because what they were trying to conserve is really the old school methods of government, which go back to colonial empires and monarchies. Because that system says, hey, whoever controls the resources should make the rules. And that's the essence of how we should run our government. And you know what? A majority of Americans agreed with them this go-round. And they handed the keys to the kingdom to the orange parasite and his cohorts who are the rich people in the world. Sure, there's plenty of rich people on the left, but there's more of them on the right because they don't want to change the rules. If we were to let democracy rule the day, we would have kept chipping away at the economic power. Because here's the only way government works. We've got those three adaptations: belief, economy, and government. We can make rules about how we're supposed to behave. We can all acquire and distribute resources. And we should base the rules for all of those things should be based on whatever our ethical code is. And our ethical code ultimately derives from our shared beliefs. Whatever belief system we share, whatever we think is good, is why we're going to create rules for behavior and create rules for the economy. And if we think everybody's equal, then a woman's body is her own, as opposed to the current bumper stickers that say, your body, my choice, for all those wonderfully piggish men who suffer from penility. And they think because they're males, because they're bigger, that's biology. And because they're bigger, they get to make a choice. They get to smack a woman around if they want to, or grab them wherever they want. And because biology says so, natural selection says so. And the closest thing in civilization to the natural world is the economy. So all we've done is get up to that next level. And we're going to see how this plays out. That's going to be the hypothesis that's tested the next 4 years. What happens when we elevate an unregulated capitalist economy and say whoever has grabbed the most resources and whoever has carried it over for generations, this is the real problem trying to organize a society, is we don't consider human lifespans in the process. We live in the now, which is a marvelous way to live. You can only affect your behavior right now. But if you don't include the historical inertia, if you don't analyze the historical inertia, then you're going to allow those forces, those historical forces, to continue to play out, to be part of your belief system and part of your mental information as to, oh, we always done it that way, so we're going to continue doing it that way. That's the essence of conservative philosophy. Because we've always done it that way, we're going to continue to do it that way. And the biggest thing we've come out of our history with is rich people own stuff. And they're different. They're better than us. That's the divine right of kings. That's leaders who made more money, so they must be smarter than me. They must be better than me. No, it all evolved because certain people climbed to the top of the heap. And back at the beginning, it probably was true that a king had some qualities, or a queen had some qualities, and they were a little smarter, a little better looking. And we all said, yeah, let's follow that person. And as long as the ideas worked. But now it's gotten to the point where we're so interdependent. And the majority of Americans live paycheck to paycheck and don't have retirement. They've got to listen to the economic forces just to have any sort of life. To keep the cable turned on, to keep the lights turned on, keep putting gas in the car, keep going to the grocery store, buying food. And if you're struggling on a day-to-day level, all you want is that flow to keep working. And you don't worry about the big picture of who's in charge. And you'll allow rich people to skim off the top and sequester away all sorts of money in tax havens like Panama and the Seychelles and the Cayman Islands and Taiwan and all those places that act as private banking reservoirs for wealth, and say, no, we don't need to distribute that. We don't really need to solve problems for the really poor as long as I'm doing okay. Because that's the deal. Democracy says the only way you can have a functional democracy is if everybody's independent enough to not vote their belly. If anybody's going to vote their belly or their emotions, then we're not really having an artificial civilization. People aren't thinking. They're reacting. They're being animalistic. And that's going to be the test over the next 4 years. Because that's why the Republicans always want to stir the pot, always want to have guns, always want to make things dangerous, because they want to invoke as primal, as animalistic a basic response as you can get out of our fellow humans. And when you get that basic response, you can predict it, because we understand animal behavior. We understand hormones and emotions to a great extent. And we understand fear responses. And we understand hunger responses. And we understand sexual responses. And we know how to manipulate people through those avenues. What's harder to manipulate is a competent professional. Someone who knows their stuff, someone who's a mature adult, who supports themselves, who has an independent lifestyle, owns their own home, has enough income, has retirement, has health care, has education, has a stable family support system. When you have all of those things, you can step back and look at the information and make a reasonable choice. And that's the only way we can have democracy. But we're not going to have that for the next 4 years. We're going to have rich people making decisions for us. And they're going to make decisions, oddly enough, that might benefit some people. They're going to throw bread to the masses as much as they need to. But they're going to skim off the money themselves. That's watch. So here's the prediction. Here's the hypothesis for the next 4 years. All of these people at the top of the heap are going to be worth way more money in 4 years than they are right now. All of the yahoos associated with the administration coming in are going to make themselves a whole lot wealthier. And the people, the majority of Americans, I don't think they're going to be improved that much. Because guess what's coming? Climate change is coming. Climate change is going to drive up the cost of food. You get rid of immigrants who pick all those crops in the farming. Guess what happens when you drive them out? That's going to drive up the cost of produce. You're going to have to do a little more work at home, folks. Sorry. You want some fresh berries? You're going to have to pick them yourself out of your own garden. Because the migrant workers aren't going to be there. You know, to get cheap goods from other places, not going to happen. You know, because everybody's learned in our global economy that ultimately, everybody wants more, but nobody's willing to acknowledge limits, especially the rich people at the top. They're not willing to acknowledge the reality of life, that you're going to die someday, that there's only so much you can abuse an ecosystem before it collapses, and subsequently, we'll end up with that. So the average person, I predict, will be worse off in 4 years, and the rich people will be better off. Pretty basic prediction. But we'll see what happens. I'll keep talking about it because I'm going to keep an eye on things and see how this shit show plays out as the orange parasite puts more people in charge. Should be fun if you've got some coverage. If you're out there day to day, I feel sorry for you folks, because guess what? Whoever voted for this guy is going to have to live with him. And the rest of us are going to employ a good dose of Schadenfreude, or however that is in the German. I probably butchered it, but we'll go from there. Talk to you next week.